You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Dori Francis with Every Voice Matters. Thank you for being here today. Good morning, good afternoon. Great to be back home in Colorado. Last week, I was coming to you from Utah. It was a great two-week trip for Espen and I, but I am certainly glad to be back home for a while before we adventure out again. I want to just let you know a couple of announcements on the website, Horizon Family Solution. I've actually added a link now where all the upcoming shows are listed, so you can see everybody. Right now I have through December that's up there. We actually have guests scheduled through June of 2022, which is just amazing. And I'm so honored and humbled that you all want to be here and share what you're doing and talk about the great things that are important in your life. So take a look at horizonfamilysolution.com. And under radio, you will find not only the shows that have been recorded, but you will find the upcoming shows as well for the next year. Today, my guest is Russell Beebe, and Russell is an addiction specialist, mental health counselor, business marketing coach, and he really works at helping unhappy therapists and wellness coaches and other healing professionals build a profitable coaching business that allows them to have a big impact, get paid what they're worth, and live life on their own terms. I've been following Russell actually for a while because that's exactly what he did for himself. And he's been very successful and he wants to help others do the same thing. So Russell owns and operates Wellness Seekers Unlimited, which is a business and marketing mentorship program. And he really helps other professionals transform their lives through creating coaching and a consulting business and really help them have the life they want while still helping others. So Russell, welcome and thank you for being here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Dori.
Why don't we just start off a little bit? Like I said, I've kind of been following what you've been doing and why and how you started this adventure that you're on. Why don't you talk a little bit about how you made that shift in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and so it's interesting that you asked that because, you know, it's all this journey of my story and that leads to the current place that I'm in, which leads to the current work that I do with people. But, you know, the long and short of it is I'm a person in recovery, long-term recovery, coming up on 12 years, substance free. Thank you. That was a rocky road. And when I got into recovery, I realized that I liked helping people. So I then went to graduate school, got a master's degree, became a licensed clinician and an addiction specialist, and worked in the field. I say worked because I'm not doing a lot of clinical work right now, but worked in the field for probably since about 2010 until 2020, different jobs while I was going through graduate school, outpatient therapy, outreach, Department of Mental Health outreach as a clinician, as a case manager, all the way up to being a clinical director of a substance abuse treatment program. And that was my journey into the clinical world. And I found over time, actually, I saw signs of this early on, over time, I found it really to be much more intense, the jobs and the work with the clients in mental health and addiction, than what I expected it would be. And so I got to a place in my career where I was like, where am I going to go from here? You know what I mean? And I was either going to get out completely, or I was going to get out completely or go to private practice, which I hadn't quite done yet, or figure out a way that I could continue working with my helping skills to help people. And so I didn't want to do private practice. I felt like that might still be too intense for me. So I ended up starting a wellness coaching business that allowed me to quit my job at the treatment center, work from home, have more freedom and flexibility in my life. And then soon after I did that, I had done all this work around business and marketing to learn how to do that. I started to think, this is where my story brought me. I started to think there's probably other mental health professionals out there that struggled like I did that could leverage a coaching model. Absolutely. To kind of gain freedom back in their life. And so that's what brings me to my current practice. So that's kind of the story that got me to
well,
that.
That's good. I'm so glad that you are doing what you're doing. I think it's a healthy place to be. We do have a lot of questions, you know, that have come in. And I know that you're not actually doing clinical work. And I really do want to focus on the things that you are doing. So I might tweak them a little bit because I really want what you're doing to be the focus of what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
So Troy in Arizona, you know, asked how long have you been practicing, but really how long have you been kind of doing, you know, this wellness coaching? When did you start this?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to just turn my light on real quick. There we go. It's that light bulb.
Russell has this light that, you know, has a mind of its own. So
And it's probably gonna, if it goes out again, we'll just forget about it.
We'll just work with
it. Yeah. So with the wellness, I started on the journey of creating the wellness coaching program that I don't do so much with anymore because I'm into business and marketing.
Right.
But I started the journey of that in the fall of 2019, and I created an 8-week wellness coaching program that was really around mind, body, spirit, and daily routine for people that wanted to live healthier lives. So I ended up stepping down from my job in a treatment center in February, the end of February of 2020, and really started working in the wellness coaching at that point. So I've been doing coaching. I did that for about 4 or 5 months, and then I moved to the business and marketing coaching. So I did the wellness coaching for about 4 or 5 months, moved to business and marketing coaching, but I've been a coach since. I should say a paid coach since March of 2020.
Wow. So you started right during COVID as well.
That's right. It's interesting you say that because I left the busy treatment center the end of February of 2020, and COVID hit two weeks after that. And I didn't even know that was going to happen, but I had it happened so fast. And I was like, how fortunate is that?
Right.
I just moved to working from in a treatment center to working at home.
Right.
You know,
perfect timing.
That's right.
So Maury in Idaho asks, you know, what licenses and certifications do you have? What professional organizations do you belong to? You know, for the business part of what you're doing, are there other aspects besides the clinical certifications that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I have the licensed clinical mental health counselor and the licensed alcohol and drug counselor. But to be clear, that's for clinical work.
Right.
I got to a place when I moved to coaching where there's a lot of certification programs out there and a lot of people do those. I kind of was like, but there's no requirement to get to be certified. So I was kind of like, I think I got it covered between my licenses and my graduate degree, the business of helping people. As long as I'm clear that when I'm coaching, that I'm not doing clinical work, I just felt like I didn't need to get that coaching certification. I'm not saying that people shouldn't do that, but because many do, and it's helpful to them to, you know, helpful in terms of like knowing what the difference is and becoming a good coach. And I might do it at some point, but I just never did it myself. As far as associations are concerned, I mean, I've been a member of the, I forget what it stands for, NADAC, which is the National Substance Abuse Association.
I should know that too, because I get emails from them every day.
Yeah, there's that. And, you know, in terms of my license, I'm just kind of under the purview of the state of New Hampshire and the state of Massachusetts, because those are the two places I'm licensed. Coaching, I'm not a part of anything. I'm just a coach, and I market myself, and you know.
Stephanie in Pennsylvania asked, you know, how much do you charge? And I just want to preference that question with, I think with most of us, that's a relatively challenging question to ask because there are so many variables, depending on what you're offering, how long you would work with them, what their needs are. Sure. So I'm going to make sure that, you know, before the end of the show, that people know how to reach out to you and talk to you about what their needs are, what their questions are. And by the way, your light went out and we can still see you fine. So don't worry about it. I'm just going to, you know, make sure that Stephanie has your information and she can call you and talk to you directly.
Yeah, and that's fine. And the best way that I can put that the answer to that is with coaching. I do this with my clients and I do this in my own program with coaching. We put packages together and there's different ways of working with people, right? And saying how much is kind of like bringing your car to the auto shop and asking how much before they get to look under the hood to tell you how much.
Same thing.
But let me just say this, coaching pays well.
Okay.
And when I do work with my clients, I'm moving them towards a model where they can charge a premium, give a high level of service to their clients, and then really work with less clients, but still make good money, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Jill
in Montana says, you know, how many clients have you actually helped with burnout? And I think that's a real common thing, especially since COVID. Mental health field.
And so it's interesting because with my business and marketing coaching, it is motivated towards helping people that are struggling with burnout, because if they do a coaching business, that changes. So, I mean, I've been doing this particular coaching program for about a year. I've helped. That's been for many of them been a primary pain point for them. I've worked with probably 11, 12, 13 people, all of them having that similar thing, to start on the trajectory of a coaching business that can give them a different life. But I'm not coaching on burnout itself.
Right.
I did work with clinicians that I supervise with that stuff when I worked in the treatment center and in the agencies, because there was a lot of that there. Working with them on self-care and things like that.
Jackie in Utah says, describe your ideal client.
Yeah. Okay, so my ideal client currently is and this can go outside of it a little bit, a burnt out and or overwhelmed mental health professional who wants to move into coaching with the purpose of continuing to be able to help people and use their helping skills, but structure it in a way where their health and balance in life is much better. And coaching allows for that.
Sounds healthy.
Yeah, that's right.
Charles in Utah says, you know, what are...
Say that last question again. I kind of lost you there for a second.
What are your strengths and what are your limitations?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I think my strengths is I'm a good teacher. I'm a good helper. I'm a good listener. And I can speak clearly to things. So coaching is a good model for me. I think my weakness is having too many things going on at one time. You know what I mean? Like when I was working as a supervisor, like staff and client issues and corporate stuff and supervisors and like just kind of things that come along with jobs, you know, you get pulled in all sorts of different directions. So I'm much better with like, you know, kind of straightforward, predictable schedule during the day, if that makes sense. So jobs didn't really work for me. It wasn't even just about the mental health field. It was, you know, I worked in financial planning years ago and it was the same thing there, you know, the 9-to-5 grind.
Multiple things at one time.
Yeah.
You know, Robert in Idaho says, you know, what's your general philosophy and approach to helping? Are you more directive or are you more guiding?
Yeah.
Probably both, but depending.
I saw that question before we got on the show and I was like, I want to be able to say I'm more guiding, but I think that I'm pretty directive in my current coaching, because I have a specific process that I take people through to get them to that coaching business that they want. So there's some very clear-cut direction that comes from me, okay? And it's one of the things that's good about coaching. Not good, it's not good or bad, but it's a difference between therapy and coaching. With therapy, there's much... Let me back up. It should be the same for coaching, but you have the opportunity. There's coaches out there that would really get upset hearing that from me. But the way that I structure a coaching program, the way that I help people do it, is I ask them, what is the foundation of the work that you'll do for your specific type of client? And then create a trajectory for that. So they actually go through a process while you're working with them on their individual needs. So it's a little bit of being directive, and it's a little bit of...
You're discovering things along the way.
Yeah. As things unfold. So I think that I don't think I'm necessarily more directive, but I definitely have that in there. And I believe strongly in that. I do believe in leadership with my clients. But I can step back and hear their concerns and work with their individual situation. You know what I mean?
Scott in Colorado asks, have you been in therapy yourself, and how recently? And
yeah.
It's often a question that are asked from therapist to therapist.
No, it's fine. I think some people would be like, oh, I'm not going to answer that. I've been in therapy as recent as 3 weeks ago. So I've been off and on over the years with it. I'm a therapist, so, you know, I'll do it for a couple of years and then kind of put it down. I've been quite a long time since the, you know, I worked with somebody pretty intensely with something called logosynthesis for about 2 months, and it was really good, and it was short-term therapy, and it worked for the issue that I was trying to deal with. So I do feel strongly about that. When I got out of treatment years ago, I worked for maybe 4 or 5 years with a licensed alcohol and drug counselor who was very specifically spiritually oriented, and I just loved the work that I did with him. And then years ago, I've kind of been in and out at different times throughout sort of the chaos of my life prior to getting in recovery. So,
I think it's not uncommon for anybody who works in addiction, mental health, to, you know, need that support themselves, because we absorb and take in a lot of information and need places to process it, you know, in a confidential way. So,
yeah. And if you work in the clinical field, working on your own stuff is so, so important, because then you bypass sort of the counter transference, and you can, if I'm healthy, I'm able, you just got to be able to show up present and healthy for people, both as a therapist and as a coach.
Thank you for answering the question. I really do appreciate that and sharing. Yeah. You know, Terry in Colorado asks, how often do you seek peer consultation? You know, others that are doing what you're doing, or maybe other coaches that you consult with about, you know, business related things.
Yeah, so I do that in pretty intensely, actually, in a couple of different ways. So I for my license, for my clinical license, I do have to do at least, it's really weird, it ends up being like 2.2 hours of peer collaboration with another licensed clinician in the state. So I do that on a monthly basis. I have a friend that I actually went to graduate school with. He's a licensed clinician in New Hampshire, and we do that peer collaboration. So, you know, even though I'm not doing a lot of clinical work right now, I'm staying in that. Also have to do continuing education for that as well. So I'm always continuing with my education around clinical work. As far as the coaching is concerned, I have been in some form of coaching myself for my own sort of personal and business growth.
Mm-hmm.
Really since March of 2020, I did one-to-one coaching. I'm in a program right now, and it's great. It helps me be a better coach. It helps me grow my business. It helps me with the marketing part of this. And it also helps me like be the person I need to be, both as the coach and as the business owner who's, you know, trying to grow that business. So right. I'm always got that support, always trying to keep learning and benefiting from counsel with others. Really.
Very healthy.
Yeah.
Megan in Utah asks, how do you set up goals with your clients? You know, what are they like? And what is success for you in regards to your clients?
Yeah. So the way that works is it kind of starts with when I get into a conversation with somebody that's interested in my coaching, we'll get on a call together and that's a free call. We'll go really deep into their situation. So that person, they may or may not become a client. It just depends on if they're a good fit and if they want to do it. But me getting to know that person's problems and pain points on that call starts the process of me mapping out, well, these are the things that we would do together to get you to the result. It's for lack of better word with coaching, it's just like an assessment and treatment planning, you know, in the clinical world, it's more about life goals with coaching. So it starts there. And then if they join with me, we then take that in the first phase of my program and they go through a process of discovery around where they want their life to be and what their goals are, including what they don't want in their life. So that starts.
People don't get asked that question. They often ask, you know, what do you want? But not very many people actually, that's great to know. You know, what don't you want?
Yeah. I found that to be so effective in my life because the I call it the not need. You have your needs, but then you have your not needs list. So that's my talk. Like, yeah, I can dream all day about where I want my life to go. But what happens is I say yes to a bunch of things that I don't want, and I never get to that dream because I'm distracted by other things. So I have a not need list. And if I'm trying to make a decision about something, if it doesn't align with that, then I don't do it. You know what I mean? So very important. Not needed.
It is very important.
Yeah.
Robert in New York asks, what's a typical coaching session like? You know, how long are the sessions?
Yeah. I mean, I don't usually go much longer than an hour. So I do in my program, I do a combination of one-to-one and group coaching. So the group coaching calls are kind of like a little bit topic oriented. So I might bring, like, I have a sense of what my clients in general are struggling with, and I'll bring that topic to present there. But they're also Q&A. So they bring their top concerns in their business because it's business and marketing coaching. They'll bring their top concerns, ask questions, support each other. That's the group model. And then what happens as people go through my program, when they're working through their business development and their marketing process, there's times when we get on one-to-one to work on their specific, and that's all about like where you are in the trajectory of the program, what are you struggling with, and how can we make some changes to kind of get you pointed in the right direction, which includes the business and marketing, but also the mindset and the interpersonal or the inner issues that they're having as a business owner, you know.
Ian in Colorado asks, you know, what kind of homework or reading do you give your clients?
They definitely have homework. I don't want them to be reading books while they're going through my coaching program because it's kind of like an online, there's online training modules. I want them to do the homework, which they, by the way, they send to me and then I give them feedback. And that's part of what we bring into the coaching calls. I want them to focus on that, then go implement. You know what I mean? And so yeah. No books.
No books. Okay. you know, Barry in Utah asked a question, but I'm going to twist it a little bit, Barry. So, you know, what do you consider to be the most important traits for a coach to have?
I think I'm going to say this, and I don't want people to think it's like some kind of authoritative thing. Like, I think strong leadership and conviction on and confidence in how you can help somebody. And that's really helped by if you are helping somebody do something that you have actually done before yourself. Okay. You overcame an issue. Now you're helping others do the same thing. Doesn't mean that you can't help somebody if you haven't had the same issue as them. But so the leadership comes from just being confident in what it is that you can provide to your client. So if a client asks me questions, I'm going to have an answer for them pretty authoritatively. But then also with that is to be able to really listen to them and to really understand what it is that they're struggling with, to be clear on that so that you can give them the right guidance and work together on a solution. So you need to be able to like sort of Socratically ask them questions to help them uncover what's really underlying the issue that they're having.
Okay. That makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Kind of like motivational interviewing, you know, it's being curious. Yeah.
So I know that you're not actually actively engaged in doing addiction work right now, but, you know, Willow in Idaho asked, you know, what did you like about being an addiction specialist or an addiction coach?
Yeah. I mean, God, the thing I liked the most about it, it was just like when, and I know with therapy and clinical work, you're a little bit careful about self-disclosure and stuff like that, but it was like, I'm working with somebody and they're struggling with addiction. It was like, I so purely to the core understand what they're going through that it just felt like a very natural conversation to have. It was also scary when the person didn't really want to do the work to get there. You know what I mean? I do believe people can recover and they can stay sober long term and they can stay in that state of recovery, but it is a relapsing condition. So what I mean by that is the primary symptom is an inability to stop despite negative consequences. I mean, that's what addiction is.
Right.
Them and everybody else in their life are like, why do you keep doing this when it's causing us and you all this pain? Right. So the most rewarding thing is to see somebody actually show up, do the work, and then stay sober and actually see the lights go on, and for their family, like their moms and dads and their kids, to be able to like sleep at night and stuff like that. That was what was most rewarding, was seeing those people that would do the work and then get the recovery and get their life back. Was probably one of the best things of working in the field.
It's rewarding to see.
Yeah.
Bill in Indiana asks, you know, what are your thoughts on confidentiality, especially as a coach?
Yeah. I mean, so just to be clear, there's a couple things about that. One is you're kind of held, and I say kind of held to the same standards of your license. So even in a coaching relationship, you're going to do the best you can to be HIPAA compliant. But right. Be clear. Coach, there's no medical record with coaching. You know what I mean? There's no insurance companies, and then you're also bound by the, you know, the duty to report if somebody, you know, all that.
Mandatory reporter just from being a licensed therapist, yeah.
So what a lot of people do, you don't necessarily need a database that's HIPAA compliant. You can actually just make your Google Drive HIPAA compliant. So that's one way to do it. Or you can just use the same charting system that you use in your clinical program, as long as those clients are clearly separated. And what this is clinical, this is therapy client, this is a coaching client. So, you know, if you're a clinician working as a coach, you just kind of do the very best you can to keep confidentiality with your clients. And I, you know, obviously I'm not going to, when on a group call with my clients, there's some limits to that, because they're, but it's the same thing in therapy. As long as they understand I won't tell people your business, but I can't guarantee that others in this group won't tell, you know what I mean?
Right.
But it's important. And I think it's also an ethical issue that coaches that have not been therapists, they breach that sometimes not knowing, because they just
assume
they just don't have that clinical background.
That to fall back on as yeah. what might truly be confidential. That's Absolutely. An interesting thing to realize.
And the same thing, if I use a testimonial, I'm going to ask for permission.
Yeah,
I'm going to agree to that.
Yes.
They should sign a agreement that states yes. that they understand, you know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Kristen in Indiana asks, you know, what do you do outside of work that helps you maintain a healthy, well-balanced life? I thought that was a great question.
Yeah. God, you know, I live near the Ossipee Mountains and the White Mountains of New Hampshire. And I started this coaching business right around when COVID
hit. Right.
Some of the travel that we would do down to Rhode Island to the beach and stuff like that was restricted this last year. I just started hiking all these small mountains around my house. Sometimes my family would want to be part of that, but a lot of times I just go by myself. I just love the time in the woods. I'll cut out at 4 or 4:30. I'll hike a mountain that's about a mile up and a mile down, and it's wonderful. I love traveling even in the winter time to the ocean. And I do actually really like the polar dunks. So I did some ocean.
Oh my gosh, you did.
Yeah. There's something about it. And I did that in February.
Wow.
Jump in, jump out really quickly. Love going to the movies, love spending time with family. My parents have a beach place down in Rhode Island, so we spend a lot of time down there. And we didn't for a lot of it because of COVID, and my parents are older. But now we got vaccinated. We're all, you know,
ready to go.
Going down there and doing that stuff.
Yes, I know. I've taken 2 road trips already. Yeah. And it just feels good. And being in Colorado also, it's great. I'm in an area where I can be outside. So Absolutely. Even during COVID, I could still get out and take day walks and hikes and things, which I feel very blessed that I had that opportunity. I feel bad for the people stuck in the city.
Yeah.
Gary Montana, you know, asked, how do you handle your own stress?
You know, the number one thing that helps me with that is staying away from that not needs list that I, you know, and one of which, and I hate to say this, is a job, like a 9-to-5, whether it's in, you know, treatment center, agency, or financial planning or whatever. I just need control in my life of my schedule. So that's primary preventative stress measure for me. Also eating healthy. I mean, I do eat really healthy. I mean, I wouldn't say it's like really healthy, but I'm kind of like a fruits and vegetables and well-balanced 3 meals a day type of person. That really helps. A regular morning routine really helps. And then obviously taking care of my recovery, which means going to meetings, working the 12 steps. I feel very strong about that. I have a pretty serious spiritual life and meditation and yoga and stuff like that. And all of those things combined keep me well. And as long as I'm not overwhelmed and stressed in a job, then things are pretty easy, you know?
That's good.
Yeah.
Emily in Colorado asks, if you weren't doing this work, what would you be doing?
I kind of feel like sometimes I'm going to tell you this funny story. I used to drive up to the place that I worked, the treatment center, and it was a really big place. And there was a maintenance crew there that there was a lot of grass at this place. Okay. And it would literally take them 2 days on the riding mower to do all the grass. It was like, I'd drive up, but I'd be stressed out because it's the beginning of the workday. And I'd look over and I'd be like, what I wouldn't give to spend the whole day
riding that mower,
driving around on that, cutting the grass here instead of being, you know, this clinical supervisor.
Oh.
So I kind of like, I don't really know, but like, I just love what I'm doing right now.
Good.
I think that if push came to shove, I probably could get a therapy private practice up and running pretty quickly, but I'm not sure that's really the work that I want to do, obviously. So I don't know. I have this joke with my wife because she's been working at, she makes handbags. So she started her own business here. We're both home. We have flexibility in our lives. And I'm just like, Kathy, if my business fails, I'm just going to go work at McDonald's or get a job as a landscaper, or, you know, like I might want to go be a fisherman on a boat, like, cause I love the ocean. Something, you know what I mean? I
just get 9 to 5 again. Yeah. Yep. Tara in Delaware says, can you tell me about a time that you helped a client with burnout?
Yeah. I mean, I think it happens in the course of my coaching all the time. You know what I mean? And it starts with them having that picture of where they really, really want to go.
Do they know that they're experiencing burnout when they call you? Or is that the word they use? Or
yeah, I mean, I would say 95% of the time when I get on a call with somebody to discuss the potential of starting a coaching business, mm-hmm. I'm going to ask them, the first question I ask is, what motivated you to get on this call with me? And usually people will start talking about some of the issues that they're having.
Okay.
And burnout comes up all the time. Sometimes it's heaviness, the heaviness of the work. So, yeah.
Okay. Patrick in Colorado says, can you tell me about a time you had an angry client and how did you make progress with them?
I mean, I haven't, with this coaching business that I have right now, I haven't really run into that like I did in the clinical world.
So they as they're making progress with you, then they're not getting angry about the change. They're more embracing that this change is going to be good for them.
And that's why the work is better for me.
Yes.
But I mean, I when I was in the clinical world and client, angry client, almost in a rage kind of thing, I just went into crisis mode or into triage mode, which was you just back off, let them have their anger, validate how they're feeling and just de-escalate it like that. You know what I mean? It's like, there's nothing, unless you're physically threatened by them, then that's a different deal. It's all about listening, reflecting what you're hearing, validating, even if you don't necessarily fully agree with them, to just get them to get back in their body. You know what I mean? What's going to work for you right now in order for us to get through this? What do you need? What's the most important thing you need right now to get through this? You know?
Well, I'm glad you're not needing to do all of that anymore. What a relief.
That's right.
Clinton, Utah says, what would you consider to be the leading causes of mental health issues today? I think COVID was a huge piece
in yeah.
creating additional mental health issues, both for children and adults.
Boy, I think it's a lot of things, but I think, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of dislocation theory,
mm-hmm.
but it's an idea that in some societies, you know, the U.S. included, that we've created a level of stress in our lives, either within the family or within outside of the family in career, you know, a pressure to perform and to make money and to, you know, and I think jobs sometimes contribute to that. But I think, so there's this stress level going on that causes people to kind of decompensate. But I think that a lot of it comes from unfulfilled purpose and desire in life. So many people get through their life and they just kind of give up because they're either not clear about it or they never move towards or make progress towards the things that they really, really want in life, or they do, and it becomes too difficult to get there and they give up.
And they give up.
And I think that contributes a lot to depression, anxiety, a lot of substance use, and then you've got substance use that causes mental health issues that cause addiction issues, and you just have it's another pandemic out there.
Paige in Colorado asks, so as a coach, would you be open to working odd hours or weekends to accommodate a client's schedule?
Yeah, so to answer that question directly, I don't do client-facing things like a Zoom coaching call or a group coaching call currently during the weekends or after hours.
Okay.
But my clients get a high degree of access to me, so I do communicate with them after hours. It's in an app called Voxer.
Okay.
But to be clear, I'm going to do whatever I can to get my clients the results that they want to get. So that means that there has been times I wouldn't do a full session with somebody, but I would jump on a phone call to help them work through something on a Saturday or an evening.
Okay.
I'm just not going to do a full session. I'm not going to do a strategy session for somebody interested in coaching. It's nothing scheduled. It's just things will pop up and I jump in. And since I'm not working with 40 clients, it's more like 5 or 6.
Okay.
Then it's not a big deal for me to jump in on something that's going on after hours.
Okay. So do you see your clients in person, or how are you connected with your clients now?
All by Zoom.
Okay.
All virtually.
By Zoom.
Yep.
Okay.
And all around the country.
Okay. So Molly in Tennessee says, I'm feeling stressed at work as a life coach. You know, would you be able to assist me?
Yes. And that's likely because of the way you have your business structured. And if you're working as a life coach for an agency, they're probably not paying you very well. And you're probably doing hour after hour after hour after hour. If we were to talk, we would talk about restructuring that a bit.
Okay. So that,
that's why. I suppose coaching, you can do coaching. You can go from therapy practice to coaching practice and have very little difference if you're just doing one-to-one all the time, hour after hour after hour, and not sort of screening and deciding who you want to work with and who you don't want to work with. So you get into the same burnout as a clinician, as a coach.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, you get caught in that revolving door and it just keeps going.
That's right. And you can restructure that and change all of that if you're willing to learn how to do that.
One last question from Kay in Virginia. She says, what do you know now that you didn't know when you started about being self-employed?
I think that I didn't know. Oh yeah. So what I wasn't prepared.
Good
so
question.
What I wasn't prepared for, I think.
Yep.
Was at least when you're at a job, you know, they're going to fire me unless I'm there from 9 to 5.
Right.
You have your own business. You have this degree of freedom, which I want. Like, I love that I could go hike in 3 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever. So, but there's the flip side to that, which is there's a tendency for me to be too flexible with my time and not get enough work done.
Okay.
So what I wish I had known ahead of time what I wish I had started doing sooner was really being structured with my time, having my own business and not necessarily treating it like a job, but having that structure and having the time blocked out to do things like it is a job. That was kind of the thing that I learned the most so far.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Also, I want to make sure that people do know how to reach you so they can ask you questions about what their needs are, learn more about what you're offering. What's the best way for them to learn more information about you, your website, and to call you and speak with you one-on-one? What's your phone number?
Yeah, absolutely. So people can reach out. Probably the best way to reach out to me, well, I would say two things. One, you can just look me up on Facebook. Okay. It's russell.bb.52.
Okay.
Is my location. And then you can also just send me an email to Russell. So it's russell@ thewellnessseekers.com. So, okay. And wellness and seekers, there's three S's in there.
Okay.
So Russell at thewellnessseekers.com.
Okay.
And then they could always call me on my phone, which is 781-382-8035.
Okay.
And those are ways to reach out. If you go to my Facebook profile, the website is thewellnessseekers.com/Russell. Okay. So that's another way to kind of check me out. But, you know, give me a call, email me. I'll ask you a couple questions about your situation, and then we can see if I can help you out, you know?
Well, I appreciate your time today.
Yeah.
Happy to see you happy in what you're doing. Like I said, I've kind of been following your journey and on Facebook and,
yep.
You know, just learning how happy you are, you know, I really, really appreciate that. And anytime you want to come back and share more information, please let me know. We'd love to have you back.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. And great questions. So thank you.
I want to let everybody know about our guest next week. It's Eric Fossen, and Eric is the clinical director and owner of Elements Traverse, which is an outdoor therapeutic wilderness program. I've known Eric and worked with Eric and had clients with Eric for quite a number of years. But next week, we're going to talk more on a personal level about success is relative. And I think it'll be a lot of fun to delve into some of the personal side of Eric. He also is an adoption attachment specialist. We could do numerous shows on that. Maybe we'll do that later at some time. But I'm really looking forward to this more personal time with Eric. The saying this week is fill your life with light of being positive. And this actually came from Grady, who is a long haul driver from Texas that I actually met on my travels this last week. A very enlightened soul that just came across in a restaurant and having a conversation. Very interesting person. And when I asked him, you know, what was his philosophy in life, he says, you know, fill your life with the light of being positive. He says, I see a lot of negativity in my life, and this is what I work on every day. So I thought that's a great thing to share with everyone. I hope we can all do the same thing. There's a lot of negative stuff that continues to happen in our world every day. Unfortunately, these mass shootings just seem to be increasing. I don't have an answer for that. If anybody has an answer for that or would like to talk about it here on Every Voice Matters, please reach out and let me know. But for now, fill your life with the light of being positive. I hope we can all do that this week, and I'll look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you for being here. Take care.
You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.